And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we will discuss the breaking news that Spencer Dinwiddie has a partially torn, I think, left ACL. We will talk about how it impacts the Nets' starting rotation, their bench, and everything else. Plus, of course, the Nets' loss to the Charlotte Hornets.
Womp womp.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up? I mean, you could find us on Twitter if you want to, at BK Glue Guys. You could also search for us on netsdaily.com. You can also get much more from us at theathletic.com. But Brian.
What? What do you want? Sad. You want to talk to me? You want to hear something?
If we are breaking the news to you, I apologize that Spencer Dinwiddie is done for the year. He is a partially torn ACL. Brian, I called you. You didn't pick up. And then you called me. I didn't pick up. And then I called you. And then you picked up. And what did you say? You said it starts now.
It starts. Basically. Now it begins. I don't know. And I think everyone knows if you've been watching this team for however long we have all our stupid lives, then you know what this means. It begins now. That's just the fear. That's the PTSD that we live with as Nets fans coming to the surface.
It really sucks because Brian and I had been talking about, you and I had been talking about the fact that Dinwiddie's place in the starting lineup was kind of uncomfortable. Like he was trying to figure out his role. He could have been a trade candidate and all that stuff. Nets Twitter loves to throw Spencer Dinwiddie into trades. National media likes to put Spencer Dinwiddie's name in trades. Dinwiddie is going to be, could be a free agent next year. He has a player option though, which could mean that he, decides I'll still go be a free agent because, guys come back from torn ACLs all the time. It's not like the end of his career or anything like that. But regardless of like his early season uncomfortableness, I mean, it's only 2.5 games that he played. Dinwiddie's an incredibly crucial part of this team. What was exciting about him, about playing with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, is that Dinwiddie has shown an incredible elasticity as a player over his career. It was exciting to see who he was going to evolve into between Durant and Irving. And instead, he is done for the year because of his injury. Brian, I know that you've been probably the biggest Dinwiddie supporter on the internet.
Do you feel that way? Because that's how I feel, but I don't know if you're saying that ironically or not.
No, I think you have as much faith as anyone in Spencer Dinwiddie's ability to ascend to a higher level. I mean, there's the crazy stat about Dinwiddie is that his scoring average had increased each of the past 6 years, seasons he'd been in the NBA. I mean, it started obviously from like 2 points per game, but it rose all the way to 20 points per game, was an all-star consideration.
Yeah.
And now he's done for the year.
How can you not love Spencer Dinwiddie? I mean, he is the best, most, he's a ferocious wit, as well as just like one of the most kind of like most understandably self-serving players in basketball. Like, and I mean this in like the best, most like idealized version of being self-serving, like in the way that Vegeta is of Dragon Ball Z. Like he is an anti-hero of a very specific kind, which makes him very much one of the, like, the best parts of any team orchestra, as we've been invoking this orchestra too much, maybe. But anyways, I'm kind of butthurt. I'm, like, legitimately butthurt about the Spencer Dinwiddie thing. It's hitting me in the feels, Mike. I really wish that this would have been a season where he could have, risen to, like, where he should be in the conversation around the NBA, just in general. Like, he's already kind of, like, top of mind as, like, a Twitter entity and things like that. But I really wish that he had had the chance to kind of just, like, shine on the national stage in the way that I think he could have. So, yeah, I'm trying to move past it as quickly as possible. I'm giving myself a little time to truly feel the deep butthurt that is seething inside my body right now.
And also the thing that I liked about Spencer Dinwiddie is that as great as Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are, they have been imported into this culture, the Nets culture, right? But Dinwiddie is, like, the shining example of Nets culture, of the Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson Nets, right? The guy who, you know, he wasn't like a completely out of nowhere. He was either a first round pick or like a late or an early second round pick, right? So, like, he has pedigree. He actually had an ACL tear in college, which is why, you know, he did fall a little bit in the draft. But, you know, like, the Pistons cut him, the Bulls cut him like 3 times in 2 days or whatever it was. And he gets to the Nets. And him being on the Nets, it was him v. Yogi Ferrell. And I've talked about this many times, but I was pro-Yogi Ferrell, anti-Spencer Dinwiddie to begin with. And then Spencer showed a little bit, and then he came on our show very early on.
Yeah.
We grabbed a young – I think I got him through Facebook. I think that's how we were able to get him.
Have you given any thought to this? I don't know if we've talked about this, but of the three – like semi-obscure Nets players that have ever been on the show, all three are as sort of rising to various levels of ascendancy in basketball. Do you think that we should begin to put out there into the media ecosystem that come onto the glue guys and guarantee your contract?
We've had more than three. I know who you're thinking. You're thinking of Chioza and you're thinking of TLC.
I didn't want to name names, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, want to name we've drop. Also had Brooke Lopez on.
I know, but he was already an established.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, like, you
and
know.
Damari Carroll, whose career has taken a nosedive.
But they were established. Those were guys with contracts. I'm just saying, like, of the dudes who are sort of, you know,
yes,
jobbers potentially.
We are the Oprah of Brooklyn Nets podcast. If you
exactly.
come on our show, your book will get sold.
Thanks.
You will become
exactly
a bestseller if you come on to our show.
And Spencer is the best example of that.
And Damari Carroll's maybe the James Fry of Nets players.
It doesn't count. No, we've had plenty of guests in general. I'm just saying, you know, deep end of bench guys who've come on. It's a very specific
You're
niche,
right.
I'm saying.
Yeah. So we maybe should identify. I mean, I think I know Reggie Perry has been on Talking Nets, which is cool. You know, shouts to Talking Nets guy. Reggie Perry is the guy I'm identifying as the guy on the end of the bench who is eventually going to be good. Again, only because of his bone structure. Love his bone structure.
It's good structure.
But yeah, Dinwiddie, it just sucks because, like, of, like, the original Nets, you know, if the Nets are Van Halen, Dinwiddie maybe isn't Eddie Van Halen, but, like, he's the other Van Halen. There's, like, a brother, right, who is the drummer, or I forget which one he is. But I'm not a big Van Halen guy. I don't even know why I tried to compare the Nets to Van Halen. I have no history with Van Halen.
I was
Halen
drinking
besides,
water, and I, like, heard you saying something about Van Halen. I was like, this can't be going well. Better come in.
Get out of here. It sucks. And so I think what we should do is talk about it more in, like, of course, basketball terms. We will talk about lineup changes, who's going to get more minutes. Maybe who the Nets should sign at point guard. And I have an idea of who that could be. I have a very familiar idea of who that could be, which I will like and most people will like, I think. But we'll talk about that later. But any other final shots to Dinwiddie? I mean,
we're going to probably, like, chop up the, you know, the whole future of Spencer Dinwiddie and all that stuff. And I mean, there's going to be plenty of time for that. But just wanted to give this moment, you know, just a little space to just kind of do a tip of the cap, you know, and feel some feelings, Mike, because again,
yeah,
this is a place where you can come to feel those feelings, not toxic masculinity. We allow for that here.
One more thing is just, I was excited to see how we would figure out his role. And we talked about, I'm just saying, I was excited to see. Okay. Let's get down to being cold, hard, and calculated,
yes,
Brian.
Yes.
How do the Nets move on from this moment? So this is the role that Dinwiddie had in the 2.5 games. Okay. He was a starter.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting starter minutes. His role in and as a starter was like more of a defensive guard who would have to sort of find his way on the offense. Nothing was going to be called for him because he's playing with Durant and Kyrie Irving. How do the Nets account for this? Do they immediately put Caris LeVert in the starting lineup? And is it that simple, or is Nash going to have a little bit more creativity?
Can I push back on one tiny thing about the starter minutes concept?
Absolutely not.
No. Because in the first game against Golden State, he played 20 minutes, and the second game against Boston, played 29. Obviously, he left early after playing 15 minutes in last night's bout. So I don't know. It was kind of all over the place, and I wondered if those were going to be the kind of starter minutes that often get eaten into by bench guys and so on and so forth. So anyways, the way that I see like a starter minute is like you're coming in, you're playing at least 26 minutes a game. That's sort of where I put my starter minute plus minus. Does that check out for you?
Yeah, I think it would have evolved into like if Dinwiddie continued to not be super awesome, like he and like let's say Landry Shamet had a game, though. I'm a little worried about my boy Landry, just a little bit. 0-for-8 from 3 against the Hornets. And Torian Prince.
I mean, are we ready to get into that? Because I have
not yet. I'm just saying, yeah. Just sprinkling that in because we'll talk. Brian has some Torian Prince thoughts that he needs to get off his chest, his supple chest. Anyways, yeah. So I agree with you that Dinwiddie wasn't like firmly ensconced in as a starter and getting requisite starter minutes, though he was a starter and he was getting plenty of minutes and blah blah blah. Okay. So what does Steve Nash do? Does he insert LeVert into the starting lineup, or do you think he's going to decide LeVert is actually best as this super bench player and we should put someone like Landry Shamet in there, or God forbid, Torian Prince?
We've got to break those two up. That they cannot be sharing minutes together. This is I don't need any more of that. That was making my skin crawl. And look, I don't want to dog Shamet because he's been here for 5 minutes and, you know, is finding his way. He had good energy. You know, he was like zipping around and, you know, he's running hard and fast and trying to get to his spots. And like, I want that ball to go in for him. I got to say, Torian Prince shooting 9% from the field 3 games into the season, 0.091% from the field.
Is that good?
With one rebound in 13 minutes. Anyways, here's what I think.
No, but be fair to him. He's shooting better from three than from the field. He's shooting a solid 12.5% from three, Brian.
So I don't want to dog because, again, this is small sample size theater, and that's not it's not fair to just be like, look, this guy's going to shoot 9% from the field this year. That's not right. But the thing with Torian is – let me just like pull up his, I'm on ESPN Fantasy where I get my stats from.
This is true, by the way, for new listeners of the show, Brian, literally his resource for statistics is ESPN Fantasy.
I mean, you make it sound like it's fake news. I mean, they have the same statistics everywhere else. It's the same. It's just my preferred UI UX for getting to my spots. With that in mind, this is the Outlook 2021 projection on Torian Prince. Let me just read the sentence to you and see if this connects. Prince is a tough, defensive-minded combo forward who slots in as a solid 3-and-D option for the Nets this season. I need to push back on a couple things here.
The 3 and the D?
the whole toughness and defensive-mindedness, like Torian Prince, again, I don't want to dog a guy, his shot's not falling, blah, 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 blah. The energy is like aggressively, it's annoyed. It's like, it's pissed off to be there. Like, I don't know what's going on with the dude between the ears right now, but all he was doing last night was like pushing Bismack Biyombo in the back over and over again, late on trying to like get into position for rebounds. And in one case, he hurt poor Hefe. He pushed Bismack's
Hefe Verde.
He pushed Bismack's stupid elbows into Precious Hefe, and that was it. That was the last straw for me. You can't do that. You cannot play dangerously when Hefe's around. So, anyways, this is all a big meandering rant to just say that, like, what's going on with Torian Prince? And also, here's the thing. All the way back to your original question, who slots into the starting lineup? I want to break them up. I don't know if that means Torian or Shamet or like, so they may not be long for the rotation if this keeps going on, because TLC, you know, every time TLC hit one of his many, felt like many, many threes last night to contribute to that late run, you know, Landry Shamet's butt should tighten with every one of those threes as they fall. Torian Prince to a lesser extent, but I don't know why his head isn't on the chopping block, because the energy level is low. It is low, Mike. Get this guy a cup of coffee. Let's go.
I know. And I was team Torian Prince is not that great at basketball last year, like pretty early on. And
you hate to jump on like a dogging bandwagon, but he's making it hard, Mike. He's making it hard.
He's making it super hard. And particularly because then Timothée Luwalo-Cabarrot comes off the bench. He has an energy about him. He's kind of like a little bit of a pissed off energy, which I appreciate, because I think he believes he should be getting more minutes than Torian Prince. And I believe the only reason why Timothée Luwalo-Cabarrot is not getting as many minutes as Torian Prince is because Cabarrot is making $1 million a year and Prince is making 13. And as egalitarian as Steve Nash is, it is still a consideration for any NBA head coach and NBA front office to give a guy who's making $13 million a year more leeway than a guy who isn't making any money, because you've invested money into Torian Prince and they want to see. And we've talked about that. We talked about this in the preseason pod. Zach Lowe had Torian Prince as like one of his bounce back candidates. We're three games into the season. He's shooting 9% from the field. There's still a lot of season left. He should, law of averages, have a string of good games coming up. I don't know. Let me ask you this now. If you had to bet, would Torian Prince shoot 9% from the field for the rest of the season?
No. But I just don't know why he's so pissed off about it. Like, I don't know why.
I know.
That's my whole thing. Like, it would be fine to shoot 9%. I mean, it wouldn't be fine. It would trigger me. But it would be ultimately forgivable to shoot 9% from the field if he was doing anything else. But look at the rest of his stats. I mean, he's had on the entire season, he's had three rebounds. The guy's supposed to be, like, your defensive-minded 3-and-D, like, hustle guy, and he hasn't contributed in any meaningful way in any stat category in the minutes that he's been given. And like, I think that TLC is playing pissed off because he's looking at Torian Prince and Landry Shamet and their combined 0 for a billion from the three-point line and being like, why am I not getting these shots? My shot goes in. I'm here. I'm ready to like hit these shots. Yeah. Anyways, trying to actually just
for a little count. So Cabarrot comes in, basically didn't play most of the game at all, then comes in the fourth quarter. He plays 12 minutes overall, scores 11 points. He was the fourth leading scorer against the Hornets last night. Of course, Durant and Irving, 1 and 2. Joe Harris, 3. And then Cabarrot, in only playing 12 minutes, comes in 4 for 4, 3 from 3 from the three-point line. We have been on the TLC train. But yes, so...
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to do what we're doing. Like, this is what people do when they watch games and they're not being like, you know, objective and they're just all in their and they're not being fair. They're just all in their feelings. And so we're doing that right now. And that's off. That's probably because we lost an annoying game that we didn't look good in. And also like one of our favorite players from the last 5 years. So we're a little upset. So, you know, give us some space, guys.
Here's what's happened in the first two games. The Nets blew out the Warriors and the Celtics, right? So there should be space for the bench role players in the second team unit. Like, there's almost no excuse for them not to play like decently well, you know, but again, it's early, but like they should be playing kind of well because the first two games were blowouts and it's not like they needed to come in and like save the starters, right? Like they were coming into a pretty cushy situation and they just had to like maintain a lead. That's all they had to do. I know. And well, I think what we should truly do is to give Torian Prince a little more time, right?
Just I know that's right, but it's hard, Mike. It's hard. How much? It's been years now. It's been years.
I know. Here's what I have faith in. I have faith that Steve Nash, once he gives Torian Prince the proper amount of time to see if it truly could work or could not work, because I don't think we're not making a determination yet, but I think once Nash does make that decision, like Marks is going to support him and of like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are going to support the decision, because what could be more frustrating than throwing a pass to Torian Prince and then him, you know, continually missing and then him not providing really anything else on the floor.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Let's get back to the question at hand. Let's answer it as journalist, Brian.
Yeah. Yes.
Here's my prediction, okay? I would think that Nash would not move LeVert into the starting lineup because if he does, the backup bench units would have like no ball handling.
Yeah.
Landry Shamet would become the point guard, or it's Chris Chioza, where if you insert Landry Shamet into the starting lineup, then your bench unit is still LeVert as the dominant ball handler, Jeff Green, Jared Allen. Then you put in Cabarro along with Taurean Prince. Then you have a pretty big bench unit who, you know, you're still be able to guard whoever you want. That's a lot of size on the wing. Maybe Bruce Brown gets resuscitated off the bench because technically Bruce Brown was a starter last year for the Pistons. And he is kind of the guy who ideally is who you would actually insert in the starting lineup, but considering he doesn't play basketball for the Nets, you're not going to immediately make him a starter. Chioza gets some minutes, our boy Chris Chioza. But if I'm Steve Nash, I consider trying at first Shamet in the starting lineup. Then I have Kyrie, Shamet, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, Kevin Durant. I have maximum shooting, and it gives me still like ISO Caris LeVert to run the second unit.
Can I say something about ISO Caris LeVert?
Yes.
It didn't look great last night, the ISO Caris LeVert.
And it didn't.
It was a little bit responsible for a lot of what was sort of the problem with last night was it was a lack of just giving Kevin Durant the ball and letting him completely, you know, resuscitate our stagnant offensive situation. I mean, that's not, I'm still not being fair. This is going to continue to just not be a show, but I'm just going to say, like, I think the parts of last night that weren't working well was like basically the entire thing. Charlotte just like basically had us figured out, I guess, on defense, or I don't know. But again, I'll point to like that second unit as a big part of the issue, and specifically Karis and Taurean and Landry Shamet. Obviously, those latter two had conspicuously bad shooting nights. Fine. Karis LeVert has the tunnel vision situation with Karis LeVert is, I don't know. Do you feel like this needs to change? I mean, I know that we talked about it when it was working against like Boston to a certain extent. I mean, he had kind of not a great game on paper with Boston, although, you know, he came in and scored sort of important buckets where needed, and, you know, did it in a stylish and, I don't know, a way that makes it seem like, oh, this is fine. He's doing well. Last night, those were some hard won points, and none of them looked particularly within the flow of any kind of meaningful offense. So as a lead dude for the second unit, like, are we feeling that his ability to create the opportunities for your Taurian Princes and your Landry Shamets and your TLCs? Or do you feel confident that that's going to be a dynamic playmaker? Or is this just going to be like the Karis LeVert show for better or worse? And when it's not working, you're going to maybe be down 10 with your second lineup in.
Yeah, but I think like, okay, so it is clunky. I mean, clunky Karis. That's what we've always called him, you and I, clunky Karis.
We've often said that.
Yeah, and I mean, we really shouldn't go too far, though, with complaining about Karis LeVert as the lead ball handler. It is such a luxury to have him be like the Lou Williams of the Brooklyn Nets that I understand that his flow, like I had advocated in the past before Dinwiddie's injury, that Karis should be the one starting and Dinwiddie should be the bench offensive unit lead guy, because Dinwiddie provides more of a typical offense, more pick and roll heavy, more I'm going to actually get a pass to a guy, as opposed to Karis, who's very much I'm going to work ISO and try to get into the lane that way. Still, though, I cannot complain about Karis LeVert. He's going to have these games where he's 4-for-12 and not looking that great. He had 4 assists. Those assists that total should be way higher, though, because again, he played with Taurian Prince, who was 0-for-5 from 3, and he played with Landry Shamet, who was 0-for-8 from 3, right? So, like, if those guys hit, if Taurian Prince is 2-for-5 and Shamet is 3-for-8, he has a 9-assist game, the Nets win, and we all feel great about the world, even though Dinwiddie's hurt. So it's like, yes, he isn't a smooth ball handler in terms of, like, he's going to get everyone their buckets, but he's still like an amazing bench piece and an amazingly talented guy to be going against second units. I wonder though, if he's just going to be inserted into the starting lineup because it's just like, he's the best guy and he should be put in there. Or if Nash is going to have some consideration for like what balances our team the best.
Well, you know what? Here's, it goes back into rehabilitative justice or punitive justice. And you know, we're, a pair of communists. And so I think we believe in I'm just kidding. A rehabilitative justice.
I'm not afraid to be labeled a communist at this point.
Okay, well, Mike's a commie. I'm a tycoon, a railroad tycoon player competitively. And
you're Max Lord from Wonder Woman 1984, which I know you didn't watch.
I watched the first half of that and,
oh, good for you.
And had to shut it off in disgust, but I did watch the first half. But if you're a believer in rehabilitative justice, you may be okay with Taurian Prince getting inserted into that starting lineup and seeing if he doesn't benefit from a lot of the attention that Kyrie Irving.
What are you doing right now?
That
are
Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
You advocated to bury Taurian Prince.
Okay.
And now you want to start him?
Listen to me. Listen, hear me out. I want to bury him because that's the devil on my shoulder being like, you don't get to have bad, you shoot 9%, like you're done, get out of here. That's the Bobby Knight. And then on the other hand, I have Phil Jackson, who's just like, brother, you just need a little change of scenery, man. And like, if you play with some dope ball players, everything's going to be fine. And
if Taurian Prince is starting for your Brooklyn Nets, I'm going to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, not only naked, but I'm going to have
But
marshmallow
Mike,
cream.
Don't you see what I'm trying to say? Basically, he is too prominently positioned in the second unit. He needs to be buried on the starting lineup. He needs to be buried in terms of that. And it will probably benefit his productivity.
Do you know how visibly frustrated Durant and Irving would be if Taurian Prince was performing the way he has?
I'm saying give him the chance to like, here's what it is, right? You at that point, you've been given every opportunity, right? You sucked in the second lineup. You're moved to the starting lineup after a prominent injury to give it a try and see if that doesn't affect your productivity, your shot opportunities, general energy level, blah, blah, blah. We've done everything right by you. If you still suck, then you get to be banished to the shadow realm forever. That's fair in my mind. That's fine. The rehabilitative justice didn't work. You're still a serial killer. You have to go to jail. That's fine.
We have to go pretty soon, but real quick thoughts. Okay. So again, I don't know what Nash is going to do. I would try Shamet as a starter just so I can leave LeVert because you're lacking ball handling seriously from your bench. Guys who do get more minutes though is Cabarrot. Timothée Luwala-Cabarrot will get more minutes because obviously he's not Dinwiddie, but everything kind of shifts around. He's going to get more minutes. Tyler Johnson's probably going to play more for this team. or it could be Bruce Brown or Chris Chioza. I mean, they have some options. They don't have the perfect options, which gets me to my final point before we go.
Mm-hmm.
The Nets technically only have two point guards because Tyler Johnson is more of a combo guard. Kyrie is a point guard. And Chris Chioza, friend of the show, Chris Chioza.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Nets need to sign a point guard? There was even talk before Dinwiddie's injury that the Nets maybe want to add a point guard in some way. I have one name for you, Brian,
mm-hmm.
okay, that could be intriguing.
Shoot.
That I think Nets fans would maybe like.
I'm ready. I'm eager. Go ahead.
Jeremy Lin. Okay? He's been training with the G League select team, which is filled with all those high school prospects who are, instead of going to college, are doing this 1 year in the G League. He played in the Chinese Basketball Association. The last time he played in the NBA, he became an NBA champion with your Toronto Raptors. He tried to sign with the Golden State Warriors G League team, but was unable to for some contractual reason with his old work with the Chinese Basketball Association. I haven't dove deep enough into that to really fully understand the implications of it. But Nets need a point guard, potentially. They will probably do some roster machinations to, you know, there'll be some like disabled player exception. They'll get some money, ability to sign someone for some money. They'll get an open roster spot. Jeremy Lin, if healthy, could actually be the kind of guy that maybe you'd want to sign. And I will say it, maybe this is whatever. Josiah loves Jeremy Lin. And there was some kerfuffle about like the Nets PR staff tweeted something about, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson got hurt at a Jeremy Lin charity game when Rondae was on the Nets still. And the Nets basically blamed the charity game that Jeremy Lin was putting on for that injury, and they had to clean it up. And I think the implication was that like Josiah was literally mad that Jeremy Lin was being blamed for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's injury.
It depends. What was going on at the charity game? I mean, like were they
lube wrestling? You know,
was there like a
jiggly
pit?
Jello wrestling? Yeah. No, it was a basketball game, and Rondae got hurt in the midst of this basketball game. Not like seriously, but like somewhat hurt.
I remember.
Josiah likes Jeremy Lin, and Josiah is the owner of the basketball team. I'm not even saying it's a bad basketball. I'm just saying like there's a lot of tentacles here,
Mike,
may wrap themselves around Jeremy Lin.
I'm sad that you have a hard out in 3 minutes because I would take all of those 3 minutes to just dump all over that idea, you know, but it doesn't seem like the thing with
Give
Jeremy,
me 30 seconds of dumping.
The thing that I mean, like Jeremy Lin, the whole experience is, I can't believe you're wishing that on this podcast again. And I can't believe you're doing that, but for a whole different set of reasons, there's that. And then the most important one is that has Jeremy Lin not done himself a massive disservice by kind of like very, I don't have like a visual memory of this, but I have like a feeling memory of just like being on camera and like kind of being openly butthurt about not playing or not having an NBA career and all this stuff, just like doing kind of a pity party situation. Did that not happen? I feel like that happened. And this is not a rhetorical exercise. I'm actually asking.
I think he was being honest with his feelings.
He's being.
And we're not being toxic.
Are you accusing me of being toxic right now?
You're being a little toxic. A little toxic, Brian. We only have one more minute for you to wrap up your toxicity.
Anyways, the real toxic thing is to bury your boy Cheese like this. Like to snub Cheese in the way that you're doing.
I think Chris Chioza would help. I mean, okay. We didn't even talk about the Hornets game. And we'll talk about it. I mean, the Nets have another game tonight.
Yeah, who cares? Maybe forget we'll the Hornets game. It's
I mean, we'll have
game.
An answer about who's starting in like 8 hours or 3 hours or whatever this is. So anyways, but thank you all for listening. You know, most of this was about Spencer Dinwiddie, thoughts to you.
We're just, that's, you know, it's an airing of grievances episode. Got to get one out of the way. You know, we'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Brian both wants to bury Torian Prince and then start him at the same time.
As a means to.
And I want Jeremy Lin. So where are we?
To either. Yeah. Anyways, we're confused.
All right. Thank you all for listening.
5 stars. We want them. We need them. We got to have them. Reviews, please. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.